Daniel, you are a pianist. Do you play any other instruments?
I have not played any other instruments. No.
Okay. You've been focused on piano for, would we say, the entirety of your career?
Yes, I have. I started at around age 4 or 5.
And you are now?
I'm now 16 years old.
Okay. A 12-year career in the
At 15, you've already had a 12-year. That's wonderful.
You know, thank you.
And the reason why Daniel's in the studio, let's get the nitty-gritty out of the way, then we can make conversation, is that this Saturday and Sunday at the Music Conservatory that's located at 110 Main Street, he will be part of the chamber music featuring Daniel Beal, presented by the North Idaho Chamber Ensemble. And at Saturday, May 25th at 7 p.m. and Sunday at May 26th, 5 p.m. And you can get tickets online at Music Conservatory. And we'll be doing this information, again and again since this is radio. So, Daniel, tell us a little bit about Saturday and Sunday.
Well, this is going to be two concerts with me and the North Idaho Chamber Ensemble, which is an affiliate of the Music Conservatory of Sandpoint. It's a collective of distinct professional chamber music ensembles, as stated in their write-up. The members of the ensemble for the May 25th and 26th performance, other than me, include Gail McCutcheon, violinist, Marcy Hogan, violist, and Christine Alexander, cellist. And all three of these string players began playing their instruments in elementary school, where they were fortunate enough to have significant music education programs as well. They were also very involved in after-school youth orchestras and small music ensembles. And also these concerts will be opened by the talented young singers Zoe Miller, soprano, at the May 25th concert, and Alana Dixon, soprano, and Jubilant Duval, mezzo-soprano, at the May 26th concert. Zoe will perform Lieder, Opus 48 by Edvard Grieg. Lieder means song in German. And she is an alumni from MCS, the Music Conservatory of Sandpoint, and a recent graduate from the University of Idaho, where she studied vocal performance. Alana and Jubilant both graduated out of the honors program at MCS and have stayed engaged in vocal performances with MCS and in the community as well.
We're talking to Daniel Beal. He's the pianist for the chamber music presentation from the North Idaho Chamber Ensemble this weekend. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'd be interested, Daniel, how did you get set up with these people? I mean, how does that happen that you have a group of musicians and then you come on the scene? How does that work out?
Well, once we went up to Sandpoint to the Music Conservatory to listen to one of their concerts that they held there, and we met Jan Palant, the conductor, and he recommended these musicians as well, and we got to know them. We rehearsed several times, and so we got the idea to do these performances. And these are benefit performances. The proceeds will benefit the Music Conservatory of Sandpoint.
Okay, and can you talk a little bit about the pieces that will be played?
Yes, we will be playing the piano quartet in E-flat major, K493 by Mozart, and the piano quartet number 3 in C major by Beethoven. Both pieces are similar in their structure, especially since Mozart greatly influenced Beethoven, especially since Beethoven was only 14 years old when he wrote the quartet.
A year younger than you.
2 years younger.
Two years younger.
Say, and is that it? Was that that was the list of the pieces?
Those are the two pieces.
How long are they?
The Mozart with repeats is about 30 minutes long, and Beethoven is around 20 minutes.
Okay.
Wow. This is obviously an early Beethoven.
Yes.
Do you notice a difference between this this piece and the kind of music that he was performing as he became a more mature conductor or a more mature composer?
Yes, this music is very lively and upbeat with a very fresh major sound, whereas some of his later works were more involved, a lot more in minor key, and they were just a lot more mature sound.
What are the challenges of playing these two pieces as opposed to playing other piano works?
Well, with these, one of the challenges, especially at the rehearsals, is making sure that everyone stays together and the piano and the strings alternate a lot, so we have to make sure that we come in on time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, can I ask you a personal question about your hands? You've been playing since you were, what, 4 years old?
Yes, 4 or 5.
Okay, so your hands have grown. Yes, and I take it they haven't stopped growing, correct?
Yes.
So what is that like, being with an instrument where the size of the hand makes a difference?
Well, I haven't had much problem with that, other than, of course, in my earlier years, I wasn't able to reach large chords very well. But now it's only getting better since my hands grow, and I can grab larger and larger chords. So that's helpful.
And so your hands will continue to grow, won't they?
What, yes, until a certain point.
Okay, to a certain point. And then you can do things that you couldn't do when you were like 8.
Yes.
Or 9. And so what's your relationship with the piano as opposed to another musical instrument, that you found a home with the piano?
Well, my parents both wanted to play the piano, but they never had the opportunity to. So they started me on the piano very early.
Okay.
Have you been, do you ever struggle with it? Do you ever say, I think I'm done playing the piano?
No, I don't. I've always liked the piano. I always will. And I always enjoy both practicing and performing for audiences all over.
I would think, you know, when you ask getting tired of it, you know, it's sort of like if he was a flautist, he could just set the flout down, flute down, or throw it. And, you know, but with a piano, it's still there. I mean, do you ever get frustrated as you are rehearsing and practicing?
Sometimes, maybe occasionally when a part is not being worked out properly, but I go get over it and I just continue on working on it until I master it.
Okay. And can you talk about who made the choices of this Mozart and Beethoven as opposed to other works? What is in the selection process?
We were looking for chamber music because I have done larger collaborative works such as concertos with full orchestra before, but I've never done any chamber music up until now. So we searched for different works and we found these two. They were just lively classical works, and we liked both of them, so we chose those to do at these two concerts.
What makes a work a chamber music in terms of, as opposed to something else?
It's usually a piece for a small group of instruments.
Okay, the same instruments, or could it be any 3 or 4 different instruments?
It can be a combination of any different instruments, basically, although in the classical music period, there were 3 common combinations of instruments: the piano trio, which is a piano, violin, and cello, the string quartet, which is 2 violins, a viola, and a cello, and the piano quartet, like these, which is a piano, a violin, viola, and cello.
So the first piece is 30 minutes long.
Yes.
Of that 30 minutes, how much are you playing?
Well, I play basically throughout the whole piece with a few breaks, and so probably about 27 minutes of it.
That's quite long, isn't it?
Yes, it is. One of the longer pieces that I've played.
Okay, and you know, the obvious thing is it's longer, but do your hands get tired, or do you have to, you know, in terms of keep on them exercising? I mean, I would think 27 minutes.
Of energetic music.
Of energetic music, but he's young.
That's true.
I mean,
I haven't had a problem with my hands getting tired as much, but one problem that I do have is my hands being cold or stiff and needing to warm them up. And also what helps is the break, the second movement, which is slower and more lyrical, and that gives a break between the more difficult virtuosic passages in the first and third movements. So that gives me a chance for my hands to rest.
And how much, will there be much time between, will you take a break between the Mozart and the Beethoven?
Yes, there should be an intermission between them.
Okay, and what do you do in the intermission? Do you soak your hands in ice water? Or what do you do?
Usually I just wait around, I look at the music just to remind myself of the next piece, and then we go on the stage and perform the next piece, which will be the Beethoven.
Okay. And we're speaking with Daniel Beal. He will be performing with the North Idaho Chamber Ensemble on Saturday, this Saturday, May 25th at 7 p.m. and Sunday, May 26th at 5 in the Little Carnegie at 110 Main Street here in Dallas. Should we take a music break and we all catch our breath and regroup? And I want to find out more about Daniel when he isn't playing the piano. What else is Daniel doing? This is a song that was recorded on this date, May 23rd. And do I dare say it, Jack? 1960.
It was recorded on this date?
Released. Recorded on this date. Okay. A song by the Everly Brothers, Phil and Don, and it's one of my favorite songs by them. It's called Kathy's Clown, and we'll give it a listen, and then we'll come back with Daniel.
All right.
That is the Everly Brothers, Phil and Don, with their wonderful harmonies, doing a song that became number one for 5 weeks back in 1960. But on this date, it was recorded, Kathy's Clown. And we're in the studio with Daniel Beal. He'll be performing with the North Idaho Chamber Ensemble this Saturday and Sunday. Saturday, May 25th at 7 p.m., Sunday, May 26th at 5 at the Little Carnegie at the Music Conservatory.
We were talking about the pieces that he's going to perform
before
we left. We've got one, the Mozart's E-flat major piano quartet and Beethoven's C major piano quartet number 3. In your preparations, did you learn anything new about the composers, or do you find yourself relating at all to these composers who lived 200-300 years ago?
Yes, I found some interesting things about them. For example, mm-hmm. Mozart wrote his first composition when he was only 4 years old, and he was already highly skilled at the piano and the violin by age 5. His father transcribed his earliest compositions for him, and he performed his first composition before European royalty and toured as a child musician.
I think I've heard, I knew that Mozart was one of those, the child prodigy.
Child prodigy, yeah. You bet.
And the piece that you're going to play was written later in his life, I assume. This isn't the 4-year-old one.
Yes, yeah. He completed it, I think, when he was about 21 years old.
Still a young man.
Still early in his career.
Yes, yeah. It still was.
Absolutely. And what about Beethoven?
Well, the Beethoven piece was written when he was age 14. It was completed. It was published in 1828, but composed in 1785 when he was only 14 years old.
What is the... First of all, do you have a favorite composer between these two? Do you prefer Mozart or Beethoven?
It's hard to decide between these mm-hmm. two, especially since they're so similar. But right. I do like that Beethoven was already beginning to transition into the Romantic period by the end of his musical career. Mm.
And Mozart died relatively young, right? I guess.
Yes, in his 30s, I think.
Yeah, I've seen that movie.
Amadeus.
That's right. You slightly prefer, you give the slight edge to Beethoven, you think, in your personal...
Probably.
Yeah.
And it might be possibly due to the fact that I play a lot of Beethoven as well. Mm.
Yeah. Did the two of them, what was their, how do they relate to each other? Did they ever meet each other?
Well, scholars speculate about the fact whether they actually met ever, mm-hmm. but Beethoven did travel to Vienna because he wanted to meet Mozart, and he wanted to even take lessons from him, but he possibly never got that opportunity.
Possibly. But maybe he did. There's just no record. You'd think somebody would have written that down, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay.
I'm wondering if there was any competitive... between the two. How often do you practice per week? Just on, you obviously you've got the two performances coming up this weekend, but the week after, How, I mean, what's your longest stretch without touching the piano keys?
Well, that would be a very rare circumstance. It would usually be only a day or two because I practice every day. And it, when I'm preparing for an event like this, it's usually about 4 to 5 hours a day. And on average, when I'm not preparing, it's 3 or 4.
Okay. And let's say you're not preparing for an event. What do you play? I mean, you sit down and you go, mm-hmm. What do you play? I mean, you know, I mean, where do your hands go? I mean, what do you find yourself leaning towards?
Well, I have an extensive repertoire of music of all genres to maintain.
Okay.
Of course, a lot of classical music that's very difficult and high maintenance. But then I also try to keep up my repertoire of contemporary music, even Christmas music and other different styles.
Okay. Any other contemporary composers that you sort of lean towards?
I've played pieces such as Keys Song by David Benoit or okay. Fly Me to the Moon by Frank Sinatra.
Oh, what fun. And what is it? Those are not 27-minute long pieces. So
no.
Do you find yourself being more engaged when it's shorter as opposed to, you know, a longer 27-minute piece?
No, actually, I find that it's easy to stay engaged in the long pieces because they carry the musical idea over a long stretch of time.
Okay.
You can see how it develops and plays out at the end.
Okay. And what is it like performing with other musicians as opposed to, let's say, doing a piano solo? I mean, do you do eye contact? I mean, what are you tuning into?
Well, it's a very rewarding experience performing with other musicians. But yes, we work out different cues and eye contact and nods when needed just to keep the tempo intact. And then a lot of things also have to be worked out beforehand, such as deciding on the tempo and other things and how articulations and ornaments will be done just for consistency to make sure they match.
Who decides on tempo? Or is it a group decision?
It's a group decision, but we listen to recordings and decide what tempo is best.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, Daniel, what do you do when you're not around a piano?
I play some tennis, and
okay.
I like hiking and reading. And another particular interest that I have is studying musical scores, especially orchestral scores,
mm-hmm.
and listening to them in my head and working on them.
Okay.
Music theory as well.
Do you ever find yourself leaning towards another instrument? You're with the piano, but is there any other instrument that sort of, you know, you're looking over there and saying, that could be fun?
Well, I would probably never play another instrument, but I can always appreciate all the other instruments, and I like to listen to a lot of them.
Ooh, the piano is a jealous, you know, you better pay attention to me. What fun. Did we queue up on YouTube a piece by Daniel?
Yeah, let me press a few buttons here.
Do you want to see a few things about it, if we can make this happen?
Yeah.
Yes, that's the Prelude and Fugue in B-flat major, number 21, by Bach. And it's from the Well-Tempered Clavier, book one.
Okay.
It's a contrapuntal piece consisting of a prelude and then a fugue, which has three different voices in it, and the subject, the counter-subject one and two. And they're very cleverly put together by Bach in the fugue.
I'll ask you an obvious question, as opposed to playing Mozart or Beethoven, playing Bach. What sort of the challenges of playing Bach as opposed to the other two composers?
Bach did not write very many dynamics, partly because of the period instruments of the time couldn't handle many dynamics.
Okay.
So the dynamics done on modern pianos now are mostly done in levels, not so much crescendo or diminuendo. It's just terrace dynamics going from one level to the next. But overall, there aren't very many dynamics in that period of music.
Terrace dynamics.
Yeah.
I like that phrase.
Yeah,
this
raises all sorts of other questions for me. You know, like the piano of today, as opposed to the piano of Mozart or Beethoven, the same or, you know, has there been, you know, the history of the piano? It'd be sort of interesting to find out.
Yes. I've never played on any of the early pianos, but from what I've heard that the keys are very easy to press. They have a very soft and delicate sound in comparison to modern pianos. And they didn't have as broad of a scope. They didn't have as many keys, I would imagine.
I was talking to Tien She. here.
Okay.
In the
Poac brought her.
Yeah, another pianist, and she was saying that the pianos of the 1920s were some of her favorites.
Interesting.
I know, and I couldn't imagine that there would be much difference, but sure enough.
I'm sure that there are books and volumes written about different instruments and the history, the movement through time,
the changes,
the improvement, you know, that sort of thing. I'd be sort of curious why a 1920s.
Yeah.
You know, when I think of a 20s piano, I think of jazz and upbeat music, and they need to take a beating.
That's true. Do you have a favorite piano, a favorite particular instrument?
Well, I like a lot of instruments. It doesn't really matter to me what brand it is, but I try them thoroughly, and I can quickly ascertain whether it's a good piano or not. But I found that pianos maybe even back to the 20s, but more so the 50s up into the 80s would be the best seasoned pianos that I've come to like more consistently.
I think of Jerry Lee Lewis. Breathless and Great Balls of Fire. Do we have queued up his selection?
We do.
Okay, How long is it?
If we play the whole thing, it's about 3 minutes.
Okay, let's do it. This is Daniel Beal, who will be appearing at the Music Conservatory this Saturday and Sunday, and we'll give you more information after this.
That's Daniel Beal, recorded, and that comes from the Charleston International Music Competition. Daniel Beal is live here in our studios here at 88.5 KR.
Much better live than not live.
That's right. listening to yourself, how do you react to that?
Well, I still find it a very good performance, but I might change a few slight things if I played it now 2 years later. It's just the way it is with pieces. They change over time, your interpretation of them and how you view the piece, mm-hmm. listening to it from the side instead of playing it.
So in other words, a piece that you perform is only at that point in time. There's no guarantee that the next time you perform, you might be a different set of circumstances. Your hands might have grown larger, things like that, that this is the piece that you played, 2 years ago?
Yes.
And so if you played it today, there'd be some differences.
Yes. In fact, it might vary even from performance to performance, even within the same several months.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find yourself able to classify yourself kind of as a performer? Can you tell, what kind of fingerprints do you leave on a piece when you're playing it? Because you're not composing the music. It's been played hundreds of times before. How is it different when you play it?
Well, I just try to add a signature touch to it by maybe doing dynamic changes just to keep the audience engaged and maybe selecting a slightly faster tempo. I usually play things slightly faster than usual.
I'm just intrigued by, you're not the composer. You're the person sitting down with the instrument and how much you come into play. There's the sheet music and the notes and whatever. And, if you're having if it's a sunny day or as opposed to an overcast day, the mood that you're in, does that come into play? Like, I'm not ready yet to play this today. Does that ever happen to you?
It happens occasionally, but I always try to do my best when performing. And another thing with the Prelude and Fugue that we just heard, another signature touch that I do with it, and that most performers do with music of that Baroque period, is adding ornamentation. A lot of the small ornaments, the decorations that you heard, I've added on my own because that's the custom to add them with Baroque music of that time.
So it has your own signature on it?
Yes.
How cool is that? I mean, that's something I wouldn't know. I just assume there's the notes, and you sort of follow the notes.
Exactly.
But maybe one day somebody will say, that's a Daniel Beal. Wouldn't that be cool?
Yes.
How outstanding.
Can you identify other, I guess I don't know how much you listen to other people playing the piano, but are you able just by ear to say, I recognize, who's at the piano in this recording versus other times?
I do listen to a lot of recordings, and I wouldn't say that I could do it every time, but occasionally I can recognize them, especially their tempo and just the way they play things. I can tell some of the time.
What's your go-to piece of music that the world around you can be in total chaos, your piano's on fire, and that you go to, that's your,
his happy place?
Your happy place on the piano. Is it like Happy Birthday or something like that? Do you see what I'm asking you?
That
when you sit down and, things are not right in the world. You got a math exam back and you got a 94 and not a 98. Something like that. What do you go to that you go, yes, everything is okay?
Well, I think that would be the Nocturne, Opus 27, number 2, by Chopin, that I played quite a bit. And it's a very relaxing lyrical piece, and I've come to have a very interesting interpretation of it that I've come to like very much.
When you talk about, you mentioned Chopin now, we played Bach, Beethoven. How big is your, music?
A repertoire,
right? Yeah. How big is it? Is it huge?
Yes, it's quite large, probably at least several hours worth of music, including piano concertos, and ranging from all the way back to Bach, early music, all the way to living composers. I play quite a bit of music by living composers as well.
Who's your favorite living composer?
I don't know if I thought a lot about who my favorite is, but I know that I play music, for example, by Fred Onivura Suroke, which is an African-American composer of piano music, and I play several pieces from his wonderful suite of pieces called 24 Studies in African Rhythms.
Huh. Well, I've never heard that.
Has the internet opened up for you access to musicians and composers that if you had to wait around for the vinyl to come out, you know, I mean, do you like do a Google search on something and, you know, how do you discover pieces that might interest you?
Well, one way of doing it is when I listen to live streams, broadcasts of piano competitions, and I hear what the competitors play, and I sometimes write down what pieces I would like to learn, and then I find the music and I learn them over time.
Have you ever been in a piano competition?
Yes, many piano competitions over the years.
What's that like? I mean, when you say a competition, I think of, you know, arm wrestling or something like that. What's a piano competition like?
Well, it's definitely different from sports competitions or things like that, where you can just definitely tell, like a running competition where there's definitely just one winner and you can know overall. A piano competition is a lot more subjective. It's just up to the judge, especially at the higher levels where all of the pianists are very excellent technically, and it's just up to who likes whose interpretation better.
Is there some variables in there as opposed to, you're absolutely correct. If somebody's running a 100-yard dash, you can see who wins it, or else there's a photo finish. But there's a lot of subjectivity going on into. So do you have a competition coming up, or?
Actually, I just finished one recently, about a week ago. It's called Music Fest Northwest. It takes place in Spokane, Washington. It's a wonderfully organized event, and I participate in it every year.
And a lot, are there other performers from the Inland Northwest there?
Yes, actually it's grown to become a very large event. It's regional, and occasionally they even get people coming from the East Coast and from other places.
Oh, wow, all over so the country. It draws quite a big swath of the country.
Yes, and it's divided up into many different categories by age and by style of music. And one interesting category that they used to have, unfortunately they don't this year anymore, was sight reading. And I always like to do that, where they give you a piece, usually a reasonably simple piece that you've never seen before.
Oh, wow.
You have to play it on the spot just by reading the music. So that was a very interesting experience.
Whoa. Yeah. I mean, a piece you've never seen before?
Yes.
Neither of us is a musician. I can't read music at all. I think I tried to learn one.
I can read a novel.
Yeah.
You know?
They usually give you about a minute to look at it beforehand, and they allow you to silently play it on the, without pressing the keys on the piano, just to orient yourself.
Interesting. I mean, you know, I'd love to see what's inside your head, what you're processing when you get a sheet of music that you've never seen before and you have to make it work.
Yes, probably the first thing I would look at, other than the key signature, maybe the rhythm. And I would see what time signature it's in, count it in my head a few times, and then go through the notes as quickly as possible to fit in the time limit.
You know, what it strikes me as, it's like a foreign language, you know, that you're, you know, and like somebody who speaks both German and English, how does your mind shift? And, you know, thought patterns and whatever. So, you know, you're speaking to us in English, but then all of a sudden you get this piece of music you've never seen before. That's amazing. I mean, I'm blown away by that.
Have you ever considered composing your your own music?
I've thought of it. I haven't had much experience with composition, but I would like to in the future.
You know, you can't do everything at 16.
No.
You know, you got to leave something for 17 and 18, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Cool. We're speaking with Daniel Beal, and Daniel Beal is going to be performing with the North Idaho Chamber Ensemble on this Saturday and this Sunday at the Music Conservatory in the Little Carnegie at 110 Main Street in downtown Sandpoint, Idaho, on Saturday, May 25th at 7, and Sunday at May 26th at 5. And is there anything else you'd like to say that we haven't covered, Daniel?
Yes, I would just like to thank the Music Conservatory of Sandpoint for organizing this event. And they offer all kinds of varied programs for students of all ages, including the Music Matters After School program and the Early Childhood Little Mozarts program, as well as many others. And they're also currently accepting applications for the Summer Music Academy 2024, which is a two-week musical experience, which will culminate in a performance with the North Idaho Philharmonia and Maestro Jan Palant. And I also had the wonderful experience of performing with the North Idaho Philharmonia and Maestro Palant back in 2021 at their inaugural concert. I played the Bach Piano Concerto in A major.
Okay, and so what's the summer ahead look for you?
Well, we'll be doing a lot of exciting things in the summer, as well as finishing up my school and other things that I'll be doing.
What grade are you in?
I am in 10th grade, finishing up 10th grade.
Okay.
Do you have your, are you getting your driver's license?
Not yet.
No? Okay.
Daniel, what do we say? We say to a person who's going to go on the stage, an actor in a play, you know, break a leg, you know, it's good luck. What do we say to a pianist?
I've heard that expression before, but I don't know of many others.
Okay, you know, like, you can't say break a string.
No.
No.
What's Although that thing? Has happened on my piano before.
What's the key cover thing?
You know, the fallboard. I
mean? The fallboard, yes. Yeah. Well, so may the fallboard fall upon your
fall
fingers.
Not fall on your fingers. Yeah. Uh-huh. How's that?
Yeah.
Daniel, thank you so much for coming into the studio. It has just been wonderful. And please keep KRFY in mind.
I will.
In the future, we'd love to have you back again. And, you know, I mean, I just want to follow you as your hands grow larger and your repertoire. How exciting.
Thank you for having me. It's been a wonderful experience talking with you.
It's been great fun.
I will definitely keep KRFY in mind.
Good. We hope so. We're going to play a music break as we say goodbye to you. This is a song. In fact, the first artist in the UK to chart with a cover song by the Beatles. This is Ella Fitzgerald, that went up to like number 34 on the charts. On this date, she does a Beatles cover from a song that's going to be released in Hard Day's Night. The Hard Day's Night hasn't come out yet. This is Ella Fitzgerald doing a jazzy version of Can't Buy Me Love.
Can't buy me love, can't buy me love.